Hello, welcome to Reflections on the Scriptures. My name is Murray Shanks. I'm the pastor of Foster Baptist Church on the mid-north coast of New South Wales in Australia. Long time ago now, in 1997, Louise and I bought 25 acres of land just west of the Blue Mountains at a place called Little Hartley. The plan was to live in Blackheath up in the mountains while we built a shed, and then live in the shed while we built the house, then live in the house, enjoying the magnificent views, watching our children grow into old people with children and grandchildren of their own. But things didn't quite work out as we'd planned. Through a series of events beyond our control, we ended up having to move into the shed well before it was finished. In fact, we moved into the shed with three little kids and Louise being very pregnant with our fourth before we even had plumbing. We had no running water, our tank was woefully small and not connected to the roof, so the water had to be delivered and paid for. Our first toilet was literally a forked branch leaning down the hill. We quickly upgraded to a porta potty, but with five people this was really very inadequate. I now acknowledge that up until this point I'd never really appreciated plumbing. It was just something that I'd never really had to think much about. I mean, that experience and the joy of finally getting some plumbing in place made me really appreciate the magnificence of plumbing, you know, as an idea. During the gold rushes of the 19th century, particularly on the Klondike in Alaska, no one really worried about plumbing. The population was virtual men, they lived in tents, and all that anyone could really think about was finding gold. So everyone simply urinated near their tent. It kind of worked in the depths of winter because it all just froze. Eyewitness accounts tell us that there were great piles of frozen human excrement everywhere. However, once summer came, it all started to thaw. Suddenly, everyone was really thinking about plumbing and about how really magnificent an idea it really was. In working on this passage, I read these words of Austin Farrer. He said, "Next to plumbing, morality is social convenience number one." When I read that, I thought to myself, what on earth is he talking about? Next to plumbing, morality is social convenience number one. But as I worked it through, rolling it around in my head for a while, I came to the conclusion that Austin Farrer is exactly right. You just have to have plumbing, especially once you've tasted the fruit of good plumbing. Really clean, good clean water coming into the home through this pipe, wastewater going out that pipe, all hidden and seamlessly integrated. Once you've tried it, you're not going back. No sane person would ever say that it's better to go without plumbing. Yet this is exactly what we do when it comes to the wisdom of God and godly morals. So some people see the Bible and Christian morality as the ultimate killjoy. I've had so many people say to me over the years, words to the effect, "I don't want to be a Christian. I don't want to worship God. I want to enjoy life. I want to have fun, simply be happy. I want to be thinking about sin and repentance and, well, any notion that 10 commandments supposedly given by some God to a shepherd living nearly 4,000 years ago should somehow have any sway on how I live my life in 2025 is quite simply ridiculous. I mean, people think God's way leads to misery and unhappiness. But nothing, in fact, could be further from the truth. The story of the Bible revolves around God. This is God's story. History is literally his story, the story of God revealing himself to us through history. But it is also primarily a guidebook for finding happiness, blessing, and joy. Amongst many other things, God is truth. He cannot lie simply because that would be to deny himself, to deny who he is. And he's not going to do that. I mean, why would God ever have to lie? God has absolutely no reason to lie. The story of the Bible is essentially God telling us, revealing to us, that true happiness, true blessing, true joy is only found in him and in living as he says we should live. It's not because he's an egomaniac. This is simply God telling us the truth. The truth is that you will not find lasting happiness apart from God. For he is the source. the source of all life and goodness and joy, aligning your life, your weekly, daily, monthly habits, your moral compass, your values and your own personal ethic with God's way is simply the very best way to live. This is the subtext of the scriptures. This is what God is saying to us through his word. Align your way with my way is simply the very best way to live. We've been hardwired for happiness and joy. God made us that way, and he built a universe designed around joy. You know, John Piper is correct, I believe, when he writes, God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. Piper isn't just making a personal observation here. I mean, his wonderful book, Desiring God, outlines extensively the biblical case for coming to this view. During the 17th century, when the leading Christian theologians of the day gathered together to think through these issues, they decided that the chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Take note, there are not two ends, just one. Glorifying God and enjoying him forever are the two sides of the one coin. I mean, this may come as news to you, but the truth is that your happiness and joy is of paramount importance to God, simply because he is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. This is the hope of glory, that we would live in his presence forever, enjoying him forever, and thereby giving him all the glory he deserves forever. David agrees. He sings in Psalm 16. And remember that when David penned these words, there was no real concept of life after death in the mind of Israel. At best, one lay about barely conscious in a dreamy state amongst the shades of death. David's expectations of God's love and care beyond the grave, when he penned these words, were outrageous in their scope. He sings, this is Psalm 16, verse 10, he sings, "You will not abandon me to the realm of the dead, nor will you let your faithful one see decay. You make known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand." For people who didn't really believe at this stage in life after death, this was extraordinary. Yet this is the hope of glory that would be revealed through Jesus, that we would live in his presence forever, enjoying him forever, and thereby giving him all the glory he deserves forever. So we come to Psalm 128. Here we find another psalm that centers around this question: where do we find this blessed, happy, joy-filled life? Well, Psalm 128, it's another wonderfully simple song sung by faithful Hebrews across hundreds of years as they made their way up to Jerusalem to worship the Lord. It's a song that gives us a clear answer to that question. Where do I find blessing? Where do I find happiness? Where do I find joy? So let's turn to this psalm together. Psalm 128 says, "Blessed are all who fear the Lord, who walk in his ways. You will eat the fruit of your labor. Blessings and prosperity will be yours. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your sons will be like olive shoots around your table. Thus is the man blessed who fears the Lord. May the Lord bless you from Zion all the days of your life. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem. And may you live to see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel." Okay, the first thing I want you to notice, and to keep in the back of your head as we work through this psalm, is that the quiet blessings of a well-ordered life bring stability and peace. And they don't simply stay with the individual and their family. The blessings that flow from a life built around God flow, like ripples on a pond, out to the wider family, the community, and eventually to the whole nation. The character of God's blessing is to multiply and expand. I really want you to get this, so I'll say it again. The character of God's blessing is to multiply and expand. The true ingredients for a life of blessing are found in verse 1. So few words, yet their potency for life transformation and blessing are immeasurable. Psalm 128, "Blessed are all who fear the Lord, who walk in his ways." That's verse 1. Blessed, happy, joy-filled are all who fear and reverence the Lord You know, owning within yourself a healthy reverence for God and owning your own sinfulness and weaknesses puts you into right standing with God. And then walking in his ways is very simply obedience, learning right habits from him. God's ways are like good plumbing. Once you get into the habit of doing them, when they become second nature to you, when they are your reflex response in all situations, and you then use them to go to the next step, like showering and brushing your teeth and washing your hair, they just make sense. Living God's way just makes sense. It's just a much better way to live. This is what the Ten Commandments are all about. These are not the ravings of a mad king shouting insane orders at his subjects. These are the loving directions of a God who knows all about his cosmos, his well-ordered universe, who simply knows best. These are the words of an eternal, all-knowing being who chooses to reveal himself as Father to his beloved children. Put me first, God is saying. Worship me alone. I am the only one worth worshiping. It's the only right and proper response to me. It's so bad for you. And it's so bad for you when you worship a lump of wood or stone that can do nothing for you. Don't handle my name lightly. I'm your God, so be very careful about how you use my name. You need a rest every 7 days. Don't listen to the people who will tell you that you can work and work and work. It's bad for you. It's bad for your marriages, bad for your children, bad for your communities. Honour and care for your mum and dad. They deserve it. And life is just better for everyone when you live like this. Don't kill people. It's wrong. And it just leads to more and more anger and hatred and bitterness. And, well, children lose their parents and old people lose their sons and daughters and whole townships lose their workforce. And, well, everything just gets messed up. So don't kill people. Don't commit adultery. It just makes a mess of the foundations of family and society. Adultery and unfaithfulness just shatters people. So don't do it. Can you hear the wisdom of God in the Ten Commandments? Don't steal other people's stuff. Don't give false testimony. Don't tell lies. Don't be always wanting what other people have. Envy, like bitterness and unforgiveness, will eat you alive from the inside out. Walking in God's ways just makes sense. Like having plumbing. Once you've tried it, you're not going to go back to your old ways. Living as God commands us to live is just better for everyone. If you're sitting here thinking to yourself, he seems to be very sure of himself, who do you think he is getting all preachy with me? You're right, I'm very sure of myself. Of course, I may be wrong. I may be interpreting the Bible at this point all wrong. But I'm saying this confidently because I am utterly convinced of the truth of what I'm saying. I've proved it in my own life, and I've had it confirmed by many, many people who have lived a lot longer than I have. Living God's way just makes sense. I want you to notice the arrogant, alternative approach to life that's found in some very key passages in redemption history. Have a look. Contrast our verse today, "Blessed are all who fear the Lord, who walk in his ways," with the lies of the serpent to Adam and Eve in the garden. Did God really say that? You'll be like God if you eat of this fruit, knowing good and evil. Or what about Isaiah 53, verse 6? We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us have turned to his own way. But you see, this psalm is saying the answer lies in doing the very opposite of turning to his own way. Psalm 128, "Blessed are all who fear the Lord, who walk in his way." Yet Psalm 14, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. Their deeds are vile. There is no one who does good. No, not one." You know, these contrasting passages, they reflect our modern world, do they not? The course, the natural course of humanity is to walk away from God, to mistrust him, to ignore him and his advice on how we should live, and to follow our own wisdom rather than his. So what's the result of living this way, where we reverence and fear the Lord and obediently walk in his ways? Well, hard work's taken for granted, but God promises that we will not just work hard, but that we will enjoy the fruit of our labour. And our psalm paints a beautiful picture to help us begin to get an understanding of the blessings of God. Verse 3 says, "Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your sons will be like olive shoots around your table. Thus is the man blessed who fears the Lord." The blessings of God are not specifically stated here. Of course, many people don't marry. Many people don't have children at all. This is simply an image to help us understand the fullness of God's blessing in a general sense. This illustration, as we would expect, is conditioned by Hebrew culture, where the standard benchmark of happiness was a wife who bore many children, and particularly sons who gathered and multiplied around the table. Vines grew everywhere, but a fruitful vine was a great treasure. A fruitful vine brought abundance that could be pressed into glorious wine. It alluded to sexual charm and great festivity, and the Hebrew text indicates that the vine was growing from the very heart of the home. This is not just any vine. This is a source of great joy and prosperity within the home of the one who fears and obeys the Lord. His sons, like the quiver full of arrows from the previous psalm, surround his table. Whilst the arrows speak about the fiery zeal of youth, here the image is of wondrous potential for the future. The bud appears miraculously, and it is to be tenderly cared for. Why? Well, because of the potential. It's nothing more than a bud now, but there is a promise of so much more blessing. I have to confess, I feel like I can identify with this psalm so much more now that I have adult children who are married and having their own children. It's like I'm starting to get it. When you do the hard work of raising children, as best you can, aligning your values and their values with God's ways, and they're such a blessing to you as they grow up. But then when they marry another person who also desires to honour and serve the Lord, it's like there's a whole heap of olive buds that are just waiting to burst into life. The blessings of God won't simply be found in my children, but in their children and their children. The circles of blessing just keep widening. This is how it is with our God. How wonderful, how amazing is he. Verse 4, "Thus is the man blessed who fears the Lord." Do you notice the psalmist brings us back to the core principle? Fear the Lord, be in right standing with God, and the blessings of God will surely flow. He then speaks of the widening circles of blessing. Verse 5 says, "May the Lord bless you from Zion all the days of your life. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem, and may you live to see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel." Now, Eugene Peterson writes, "The Bible talks of the fear of the Lord, not to scare us, but to bring us to awesome attention before the overwhelming grandeur of God, to shut up our whining and chattering and stop our running and fidgeting, so we can really see him as he is and listen to him as he speaks his merciful, life-changing words of forgiveness." When I read those words, I can't help thinking about the times I've been in the surf when a shark has surfaced nearby. It's only happened a couple of times in the years that I've been out there surfing. Suddenly everyone stops chatting, they stop paddling and goofing around, they stop looking for the next wave, and they just watch the shark. The shark has their attention, their full attention. God deserves our attention, our full attention. As C.S. Lewis character Susan from The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe says to Mr. Beaver, "Aslan is a lion, the great lion." "Oh," said Susan, "I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion." "Safe," said Mr. Beaver. "Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe. But he's good. He's the king, I tell you." God isn't safe. I mean, who would worship a tame, safe God? Come on, he's not safe. He's the ultimate wild one. You should fear him. But he is good. And he promises that when we fear and worship him and live as he says we should live, that he will bless us abundantly in ways we probably would never imagine. And those blessings will multiply and multiply and multiply for all eternity. Because, as John Piper says, he is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. Amen. May the Lord bless you today.